Today, we're exploring a perspective on water safety that goes far beyond signs, warnings, and hazards. For First Nations peoples in Australia, the ocean is not simply a place to swim, fish, or recreate. It's part of what is known as sea country, a living connection between people, culture, community responsibility, and a place that has been passed down for thousands of years. The idea of sea country may sound familiar to those of us in Hawaii, like our relationship with Kai and Aina. It reflects a responsibility to care for the places that sustain us and to pass that knowledge on to future generations. Australia is home to hundreds of distinct First Nations communities, each with its own language, traditions, and connection to the country. Today's guest's perspective is shaped by his heritage and his connection to sea country along Australia's east coast. Joining us today are Brooke Sylvester and his son Zane Sylvester. Brooke is a proud Bundjalung man whose ancestral country spans parts of Australia's east coast, including areas near today's Gold Coast. A surfer, educator, community leader, his work is focused on strengthening connections between culture, sea country, and water safety. Through his leadership with First Nations lifeguards and other community initiatives, he has helped to create pathways for Indigenous youth to connect with culture, leadership, and the ocean. As a saltwater man, Brooke brings a perspective that sees safety not simply a risk reduction, but as a responsibility rooted in connection to people and place. Zane represents the next generation of that leadership. Through his own experiences, he offers an important perspective on how young people can connect culture, identity, and responsibility to the water. At a time when Hawaii has the second highest drowning rate in the United States, there is much we can learn from Indigenous approaches that view safety not as something separate from culture, but as something rooted in belonging, responsibility, and connection to place. Brooke and Zane, welcome to Deep Dive into Water Safety. I know that was a long introduction, but I need to give people some perspective of who we're talking to. And you have this amazing surf school also, right? Called Bombora. Is that correct? And
Yeah.
I am not sure if I pronounced your heritage, your proud Bundjalung heritage. Did I pronounce that right now that I'm
You did
asking?
right. It was right. That was right.
Okay.
Yes, you did very well. Thanks, Margaret, for having us on the show.
That was lucky. Welcome. Thank you for setting up the Zoom, and it's the next day for you, and I know you're really, really busy, but let's get this conversation started because it's important for us here in Hawaii to hear from what you're doing successfully. So let's start. First Nations lifeguards. How did the program begin? What need did the program address? What makes the program different from other traditional water safety things? And let's just start with that.
First Nations lifeguards started because after many years of working as a water cameraman myself on shows like Bondi Rescue for 11 years and early days as a water cameraman on the ASP tour, me and Zane have both been to Hawaii. I've been there a few times filming in the water, so we know the waterways that you're talking about. The connection for us with First Nations lifeguards was after doing so much time on the coastlines, we started to realize that our people didn't really have a big presence there. So we wanted to start like a training academy so we can get the Indigenous crew all trained up and get them some RTO approved certification so they could actually work on the waterways around Australia. And that's sort of like our mission to bring our people back to our waterways because we didn't have a big presence there and at the moment. And I think positive role models in society like being lifeguards is really important for our Indigenous people to grow and become a better part of society in a way,
Yeah. How long has this been? When did you first start this program?
We first started this probably about 2 years ago, maybe 3 years ago. You know, it was an idea that we started, and then we've just been working on it. And Zane has come through the FNL Academy, and he's scored a job on the Gold Coast City Lifeguards. And that's a pretty hard course to get through.
Yeah, I think it's like one of the hardest to get in the world, maybe, like qualification wise. Definitely in Australia too. So why is it important to do something in the Gold Coast with the Indigenous population? Tell us more. Tell people here, because I don't think people understand that background and why that makes a difference. And Australia is a big place, right? There's Sydney, there's Auckland, and there's Queensland, and you're part of the Queensland part of Australia. Is that correct? And
Yeah, that's correct.
okay, so tell us something about it. You are a Bundjalung man. Explain that to me. I feel pretty ignorant about that.
But there's lots of territories, or lots of not territories, but lots of mobs and lots of lands all over Australia. I think there's a great connection between the Bundjalung people and the ocean, and I've been experiencing how to bring us back to our waterways with role models in society, as I just spoke about. But I think the connection's there. It's in our DNA, and we've always been a part of the oceans around here. And we've surfing and now lifeguarding coming into it. We're looking at some good times ahead, good bright days ahead.
Sorry. Wait, give me one sec. I'm just gonna blow my nose. Sorry, Margaret. Hi.
Anyway, so
Hi, Zane. You
Zane's
should get up
I've
closer
got
so we
hay
can
fever.
hear
I've got
you.
hay fever right now. The connection for us culturally is to showcase our culture and bring it to bring it back to a broader audience in Australia. I think culture is something that people are interested in, and they want to learn from that. And the learning path of being cultural is in our DNA, and it's a gift. And we have like little programs called like Eyes for Lives, and we use that sort of stuff as stepping stones for young Indigenous youth to come forward and train up, and then hopefully become like role models like Zane one day, and be a great surfer and a lifeguard and help people, really save people.
So tell me about this culture that's ingrained in you as a, what is a saltwater person? Explain that to me. Is that something that you would say you are?
Yeah, it's like we're so like Bundjalung tribes, like primarily like it's on the east coast, and like you got tribes all over the country, but like the Bundjalung country, it's like from like the north side of the Grafton River, from pretty sure, yeah, to like Talabudra Creek, which is like I don't know if you were to drive from one end to the other, it's about 3.5 hours of like distance driving. So it's a big country, and be. There's a lot of waterways, and it's like right, it's on the east coast, like Bundjalung country's on the beach as well, like so that's why we've always been like saltwater people,
Right.
like that's our tribes on the east coast of Australia. It's connected to the beach and the waterways, and it's just like kind of ingrained in our DNA.
And I think that's because, it's a food source too. That's why we've been there forever, because that's where, all the good food comes from,
Right.
right where the salt water meets the fresh water. And that's
Yeah.
where the best food sources have always been. So culturally, for mobs to be close to salt water is, that's the dinner table, really, a lot of the times. So,
Okay, so when you're talking about water safety, do you have a high drowning rate of Indigenous people on the Gold Coast? Because we have in Hawaii, 26% of our population is Hawaiian or Pacific Islander, but they represent 37% of drownings, right? So that's not good. So
Yeah, that sounds terrible.
We're trying to figure out how to get messaging better that people will listen to. And I'm just curious how you're doing that with your program. You're talking about
Well, I mean,
surfing. Go ahead.
Yeah, the all the council, all the beaches on the Gold Coast, and that are run by Gold Coast City Council, and they have teams of lifeguards that operate up here, and Australia is growing very quickly, and lots of the people that are coming to Australia now to live, they're probably not the best swimmers, so that's kind of always winds up the danger factor because people don't understand the ocean. Like, you can have people that can come to Australia as tourists or anything, and they can look at where the water is still, and we know that that's where the deepest water is, but they don't think that. They think that the water's better there because it's not the whitewash, so the waves are not hitting them. So you'll find them people entering the water in dangerous spots like that, where wherever the water's deep and the waves ain't breaking, that's it's probably over your head. So when you can walk out, and then you can just slip off the bank, and you can find yourself in a lot of trouble straight away. And the east coast of Australia is, I don't know, the waterways are so condensed that I think if you traveled around the east coast of Australia, you could go around the world 10 times nautically to match our waterways. So the intenseness of our water system is in New South Wales and on the Queensland, South Queensland, is it's intense. There's lots of water, and there's so there's any people want to go out and enjoy the great outdoors and stuff like that, and then they might just not be able to swim and step into a river and drown. It's a hard process, getting everyone to understand, that's for sure. And I imagine where you guys are sitting too, it's hard for you guys to get that message out to everyone else. And what I maybe just said about how people walk into where the water is not breaking, thinking that that's the best place for them, when if the whitewash was there, they could stand up, hitting them, the waves like that. So yeah, anyway, yeah.
Are you using your culture, and what's the program you mentioned the beginning for young children? That's a program. I couldn't understand what you said.
Yeah, we call it Eyes for Lives program, and it's like a junior ocean person or waterman's
Like junior
way.
lifeguards?
Yeah, Tugan lifeguards, yeah, they're down the road. Lots of the lifeguards.
Junior, she
Oh,
said.
sorry, junior lifeguards, yes. Yeah, definitely junior lifeguards. And that's what we're building, because they see the role models, they see the other people, they see their elders, their brothers, or someone moving out and going getting a job, a positive role model in society. And that's a pathway for them to, better themselves. And with the Eyes for Lives, it's always about, if there's one thing in this world that saves lives, and that's your eyes. So that's why we call it the Eyes for Lives. And we teach them at a young age how to spot danger in the ocean, how to deal with danger in the ocean, how to be strong in the ocean, how to train, how to use the ocean as your best friend, how to be and eventually be comfortable in the ocean. So most lifeguards that we know, like, everyone's comfortable. It doesn't matter how big the surf is or how, small it is. It's just the comfortability, and it takes time to progress into
That's,
that feeling.
yeah, like your knowledge of it for sure too, like learning what's the dangers. And yeah, that's what Eyes for Lives is. It's like teaching the youth about being able to, like, yeah, like Dad was saying, spot the dangers and then be able to educate other people that
How
are
old
like
are
that.
our kids that start that program, Eyes for Lives?
Yeah, we got like Nate, so he's what, like probably starting about 15. Like it can't be like, I mean,
Yeah, you have to be
with
able to do a few things before we take you on board. Like, you have to be able to swim a certain distance, and we can help you get to those levels. That's all part of the program. But by the time you step into Eyes for Lives, it's like 2 years before you could become in the workforce.
like
So
adults. Okay.
it's like,
Oh,
yeah.
okay. So what are you doing for water safety generally for young people? Do you have anything in the schools, or do you see that as not important for what you're doing with your particular culture and local people? What is important for them to understand the ocean and the environment if it's part of your DNA? What
Yeah.
messages are you bringing?
Well, we're trying to close the gap on how to be safe in the water for Indigenous communities and for all Australians, really. We're just about, just talking to people, showing them stuff, taking them training, working, and we have little programs so they can come and join us, a few times a week. Yeah, it's just closing the gap between awareness, really, ocean awareness. People don't realize that you could just walk out there and everyone looks like they're having a great time, and you could just step into the wrong spot. And if you can't swim, you could actually be getting resussed on the beach in a short time after if there's lifeguards around. Australia has lots of remote places where there is no lifeguarding. So we'd love to close the gap between Indigenous communities in those places, tourists coming in, training up our lifeguards, and having them, be part of the community, looking after tourists. I mean, it's going to take us a while to get to that bit, but that's the big picture for us too.
And what are you planning now is you're going into winter, right? So is this a time when you see a lot of people at the beach or at the rivers or not? Probably not.
No,
A lot less.
yeah, it's a lot less. The lifeguards on the Gold Coast City Council that Zane works for, they've been they're on like they're only on permanence at the moment because the crowds and the tourism is not here.
Yeah,
But
but then in like summertime, there'll be like nearly three times as many lifeguards on duty at every beach, and they have other beaches that open up only in the holiday season because we get such a big amount of like, because the Gold Coast is super like tourism driven, like you get a lot of tourists, so you get people from everywhere around the world, even places without any oceans, and that's why it's such a high level of credentials you need to have to be able to get a job on the Gold Coast City lifeguards is because it's such a tourist destination. Like there's a lot more like it goes on.
So
Yeah,
you
there's
talked
a
about okay, so I want you to talk about that in a little bit, Zane, but tell me about all the rivers, and you're telling me you have so many rivers in this area. How are you communicating to the indigenous people or local people who live in this area? You tell me it's in your DNA. Are they drowning? Is that the issue, that they don't have
not
this
too much.
information anymore, or what?
Well, I don't think that they, if those statistics are there, I don't think they become really public news. And so we don't really have a gauge on exactly that question, what you're saying. I mean, Australia has so many beaches. There is more unpatrolled beaches in Australia than probably anywhere in the world. Maybe, you know what I mean? There's lots of unpatrolled beaches, and that's where local communities are and the dangers are. So, I mean, the statistics behind people, Indigenous people, drowning, is not really, we wouldn't be able to tell you that because it's not really public news, and we don't know. It's not something that we are familiar with. And I mean, a drowning's a drowning at the same time for us, but it's a terrible thing. And yeah, we don't have that privy to that kind of information about those
You
communities.
told, yes, I'm sorry to interrupt you, Brooke, but before we set on this interview, there was a time you said, I have to go into the bush, I think is what you was the word you used. You were going to be out of any kind of contact. Tell me what you were doing. You're going into these areas to check out what or do what? Can you tell
Yeah,
me?
oh well, that's we know that there are community, we know that there's communities out there, and they are on riverways and all of the and waterways, and we are trying to get to those communities eventually. It's just a matter of,
Process.
it's a process of funding and delivering, and people seeing the cause and seeing that this is a good worthy thing to do, and then maybe the government will get behind it. And that's we're very hopeful that those days come soon. But the other day when you were talking to me about going into the bush, I was actually going to Bell's Beach to surf for the Australian Indigenous titles, and the reception down at Bell's Beach is you're in the bush and there's no reception. So there I was going to go that into that competition with Zane, the Australian Indigenous titles held at Bell's Beach only 2 weeks ago. And that's what I was doing. I was telling you, I'm going into the bush. I like the way you thought that I was going out to the remote communities. Yeah, we hope to get out to those remote communities one day and teach them some water safety so they can help each other too.
Do they come out in to see you at all? I mean, I'm feeling very stupid here, but they're in their community. Did they leave that community to come out to where you are to teach?
Certain sports and stuff like football and that would bring them out and things like that, you know,
But
but
not as much in the ocean. I feel like there's a massive population of Indigenous people, of course, because it's an Indigenous country. However, I almost feel like you see less Indigenous people using the ocean and stuff, almost as a, like, I don't know how to really put it, but it's almost like they're not confident in the ocean because they haven't been educated on it. So they don't. The good thing about First Nations lifeguards is them seeing Indigenous people and First Nations people, like, creating a pathway, and like they can see someone as like themselves as another Indigenous person, and showing them like there's nothing to be afraid of, and like anything's possible, really. You could choose this as your career if you wanted to, and it like it's almost like we not even have to go and like tell them. They can just see us and what we're doing and be like, well, they're just like me. I could do that.
So you're talking about Bambara. Is that what you're talking about? Did I pronounce it right?
Yeah, we call it. It's called Bombora.
Bambora, sorry.
Yes,
Bambora.
and apparently Bombora is the only Australian Indigenous name used in the English dictionary.
Really?
So I heard that Captain Cook came into Botany Bay and said hello in the early days, and the local Indigenous crew said to him, "Look out for your boat. Watch the Bombora," which is a big bombora in the middle of Botany Bay, and it holds like 20-foot waves. So I imagine he must have came into that bay, hiding from what he was dealing with outside, to come in for shelter. And the local Indigenous crew said, "Watch out for the bombora because it'll smash your boat to pieces in some kind of way."
That's a very good story. And so now I have context for the name of your surf school. How did they find out about Bambora?
Oh well, we've just launched over the last year, and we've got our networks out there. We're on Instagram, and
Yeah, big on social
we're
media,
big on
trying to
social media.
grow our social media. And then, because I mean, the social media is the biggest thing these days. Like, you find out about any. Off social media, you see everything that you see. You mainly 99% of the time you see it on social media, and you find out about it like that. So for us growing our following on with the Bombora Surf School and with First Nations lifeguards, that's the best way to be, because more people are going to see it, you know, more Indigenous people will find out about us, you know, and that's the biggest aim right now, just growing on
So you're,
there because they're never.
yeah. Yeah, I was reading about your school online, and it's, I mean, you talk about Indigenous people as being part of this, part of the culture, part of water safety, and come and be part of us and learn about surfing and everything else. Is that correct?
For sure. That's what we do. That's what we're doing. We're we have an all ability school, so we take paraplegic surfing. You can see all this up on our Instagram pages. We had people there the other day with MS and a blind guy coming in and having a surf with Zane, and he got to his feet and got a good wave. And so we have all ability surf school, so we have the beach wheels that we have, the proper all the gear, big boards from like Wick Wack, Wayne McEwan makes these certain boards, and we have all that. And it's just opened up the doors for lots of people who never go into the ocean, and they're scared to go in the ocean because they don't want to drown. So then, they come to us, and we have like the right crew. Zane's a parasurf coach, and we take them all surfing. We have Jacko, who just competed in Hawaii, Agent Chaos, and he made the final in the prone division in Hawaii only a month ago,
He's an Indigenous.
and he's an Indigenous prone surfer.
Oh, that's fantastic. Now, is he, is that because of your encouragement?
Oh no, Jacko's been, he's been he loves he's been a surfer forever, you know what I mean? And
That's a key thing.
he still holds on to it, and he comes and trains with us before he went to Hawaii, and we had a couple of good days there, and all of a sudden he got to the final in Hawaii, and yeah, we were stoked for him, and he's like our ambassador too. So Indigenous, and he's a paraplegic, so he's a.
Okay, Zane, you're up. Tell me about you. You're following in your father's footsteps, and you're a pro surfer and
Yeah.
sponsored. So tell me everything about what you know growing up,
Yeah,
what you've done.
so growing up, having dad always been a surfer and like being a water cameraman and stuff, I was always introduced to the ocean. And it's funny because actually when I was little, he'd take me out surfing and stuff, and I hated it because I'd be scared of the big waves. And then so growing up and then learning about the water and building confidence, just like kind of our whole drive with this thing about teaching people about the water. Once I learnt and you get educated on the ocean and waterways and stuff, I grew back into my surfing. And yeah, I started competing a fair bit, and but I'm also trying to be a free surfer and just go get good footage, go get some sick waves, and keep my sponsors happy, and just live the lifestyle of a free surfer. And but the main goal that I want is I want to like take my surfing to the next level and represent my culture, being a Bundjalung man, and get that out there and be proud Indigenous surfer. Because there's a few, but there's not enough.
So tell me what that means to be a proud Bundjalung man, because I agree with that. I think, I've had Kaina Makua on, who told me that Hawaiians have had ceremonies, but we haven't had any new ceremonies. So maybe it's time we create a new ceremony for water safety.
Yeah,
And
100%.
yeah. And Dwayne DeSoto, who you may know, who's also Hawaiian, who starred in Duke, Ambassador of Aloha, has said many times that we operate in our individual silos and we don't work together. Whether we paddle, fish, swim, whatever, we're all in this together. And also that we've neglected our youth. And he kept saying it over and over again. I'm going to say this to you again, Margaret. We've neglected our youth. He's running a program that I think is a gold model for Hawaiian culture because he doesn't just teach water skills like swimming, he teaches navigation, voyaging, learning about the stars, right? How they navigated. And then also, just understanding the ocean and being safe in it. All those things that come from the culture of Hawaiians, right? So I want to hear more what you think being a Bundjalung man, what that means for you and your culture, and how what we can learn from that, because I think it's important for messaging here. We're just not getting the messaging right. And I think even visitors would probably benefit from messaging that has to do with Hawaiian culture. And I think that may be true in Australia also, but that's just
Yeah, I
my
think,
opinion.
yeah, I believe exactly like what you're just saying. So to me, I reckon the Indigenous culture, like the Hawaiian culture, it's like such a strong, predominant thing over in Hawaii and stuff. Whereas like in Australia, it's like the Indigenous culture is strong, but it's like in workplaces and sort of stuff like that. Like it's not really talked about. And
Yep.
that's how I feel like with this whole thing that we're doing, it's great because it gives young, like, so basically you've got like me being a young like Indigenous lifeguard, I can show the younger crowd that like I can connect with them better and relate to them better because I'm in their sort of age group, and I feel like that's a massive thing is because you get, sometimes a younger crowd ain't gonna want to listen to someone that's a bit older. Like my dad could be trying to teach someone younger around my age something, they might not want to buy of it. But then when they get someone like me and they see, oh, he's Indigenous, like just like me, then it opens up, like they open up to it. And I feel like that's the biggest thing, like you were saying about learning how to voyage and read the stars and all that stuff. That to me is almost bigger than like just being able to be a good swimmer. Because it's like if you can read the water and you can spot a danger, or even if you get into danger and you know how to, like, people can get into a rip and they're the strongest swimmer in the world and they still won't they won't come out on top against the ocean, you know. But whereas someone like myself, if I get caught in a really bad situation, I know the waterway, I know the waters, and I know how they work. So, you know, I feel like that's a massive thing, is like educating people on what to even do when you're in danger,
That's
because that'd be the biggest lifesaver. When the lifeguards aren't always going to be there, and I reckon that's the biggest thing we need to get out into our communities and stuff, and just educate people all over the world.
exactly right, Zane. So, what's our message
Yeah.
going to be all around the world? Because people travel all over. You're right. You have all these people who moved into Australia and then they come and visit. We have people come visit here. You've been here. Your father's been here. You know people here. You
Yeah.
know. So, what's our message going to be? Because reading the environment, understanding the ocean is more important. Well, swimming obviously is a skill that's important to learn. I think floating is something for survival that's needed. And we all know, just as you said, Nate, Zane, you can be a strong swimmer, but you can also drown. And that is.
100%. Yeah, I reckon. I know it's silly. Like, there should be a, like, 'cause I mean, you can travel anywhere in the world. Like, there's so many places that have beaches. There's no places that have water with so much power, like the West Coast of Australia, the East Coast of Australia, Hawaii, all the Hawaiian Islands. You know, there's nowhere really. There's no, like, Hawaii's way more, like, you know, we've got a lot more power than Australia does in the, like, compared to the East Coast of Australia. Hawaii's got a lot more power in the ocean. So, you know, it's that thing where it's like, it's almost like if you're a tourist and you're coming here, or like if you're going to go into the waterway, there should be a thing where, like, designated zones and stuff. And like, it's a hard thing because, I mean, not people don't always want to listen. You know, you tell people, well, you know, go in the flags, and they won't, because they think, oh, I swam over here in this joint. But it's like, there's no dangers in that place. So, you know, so it's a hard thing. And I don't know, we need to come up with something where people have to, like, don't know, address their abilities and like their experiences before they're allowed to even, I don't know,
Well, I
go
think,
near the water.
yeah, I think you've come from a culture that is water, right? And somehow that message should get out to visitors that the people here who have lived here for thousands of years know more about the water than anybody else. And this is what they know. And you
Yeah.
should learn about it. You know,
Yeah.
I think we're here at the same place here trying to figure out what the messaging should be. So, we're not telling people what to do, but giving them an idea of what our culture is and what we do in the ocean, the experienced people. This is what they do, and this is who you should look for any information. That means guards, that means experienced water people, that means fishermen, whatever. But
Yeah, 100%. And that's what I was saying before about having a younger, like, being a younger lifeguard. Like, I'm not sure how, if there's a big, like, younger generation of lifeguards over there. But, like, I mean, even getting someone, if there isn't, getting someone in, like, the adolescent sort of age group doing lifeguarding and stuff, you know. And, like, I feel like lifeguards anywhere, you want to be proactive than reactive. You know, you want to be going out of your way to educate people before you react, before you're going in to save them. You know, you want to give them that, you know, but not everyone's going to listen. That's just how the world is. Not everyone wants to listen, but you can only do your best. And, you know, I feel like the big thing's going, you know, you see anyone walking down the beach, just maybe what we could start doing is just giving them 5 minutes out of our time to educate them, or like having some more signs at the beaches, like explaining before you enter, go speak to the lifeguards about the dangers in place, you know.
So, Zane, tell me more about Bambora. You're an instructor there with your sister, India, is that correct? And your
Yeah.
father. So I didn't realize it was para surf too. That's very interesting to me. So why did you make it that broad of a category? You're trying to get everybody in the water. Is that the goal?
Yeah, well, because the ocean's for everyone, really, you know. And there's not a lot of places that people that, you know, aren't as able as us to be able to access the water. So I know Dad started the whole thing, and his idea was, because we know that Jack Humphrey, who's an Indigenous paraplegic surfer, and you know, and it's like we know all these people that have these disabilities and stuff around us, and we're connected to the water. So it was like it was a bit of a no-brainer having that all abilities and like opening up the doors to the other people as well, you know, and having everyone be able to come and be a part and being able to take everyone out and share the stoke.
That's fantastic. And you've only had this for 2 years. Is that what you said, Brooke? Is this program?
Oh, Brooke's just out having the water, but no, we've had it for about a year, the surf school.
That's not very long at all.
No, but we've done a fair bit with it so far, which is great.
So tell me some more. What have you done?
Well, we do a lot of training with we've been getting into trying to do a bit of like we do high performance coaching. So do like high performance video analysis coaching with like up and coming, like, you know, sort of superstar Groms. And then
Okay.
we just do deep beginner level surfing where like you like the other day I had two people from Germany and one's never surfed before, you know, and took them out there and it was, you know, raining real heavy and it was like looking real grim. And they would just took them out there and I was thinking, oh, these people won't be frothing at all. And they were just that stoked. The guy's like, oh, I just want to get an idea for surfing. And I took him out and I gave him all my pointers and I got him up to his feet and he stood up first time ever surfing and he was losing it. And he's like, oh, I've never thought I'd surf. And yeah, I was mad.
So, this program is going to target the indigenous people too, is that correct? You're hoping you'll get them out of the inland to your program? Is that what you're
Pretty much, yeah. That's what we want to do is just grow on social media and stuff and be able to reach them, you
And
know,
how
where
are
they can
you?
see us.
Yeah, so what's the message to them?
Message to them would be, if I can do it, you can do it probably, I reckon.
Yeah. Okay. That's a good one.
The message to them would probably be like, well, I mean, I never thought I'd be a lifeguard or a surf coach, but I've always loved surfing and being in the water. And I used to work as a landscaper and, you know, slave away in the sun all day and it sucked. And then Dad sort of kind of said to me, oh, well, you're always in the water. Why don't you go be a lifeguard? And I saw other people my age that had been lifeguards for a few years. And I was like, well, you know, they're just, why can't I do that? And then I went and put the hard work in and put my mind to it and got all my certificates and stuff, and here I am, you know. So I feel like if I had a message really to the Indigenous community, it's like, oh, well, here I am, I'm an Indigenous person, and like, if I can do it, why can't you could as well, you know?
That's a good message. Mark Haimona said that what his message to the people in Otero is stay afloat, stay alive. That's what his message is to people. Do you have anything like that? I know Tahoe has.
Like a little motto sort of thing. Well, not off the top of my head right now, but
Yeah.
I know I'd probably just say if you want a bit of advice, if I was to give them advice, it's like if you're going to go enter in any waterways, probably do a bit of research beforehand and just give it five, just take 5 minutes out of your time to educate yourself a little bit on the ocean or the rivers or whatever you're going to, you
Are
know.
there is there information on the rivers available to people?
Yeah, for sure. Just on
Okay.
the internet.
Oh, okay.
And you'd be able to like you could always just yeah, just simple like I don't know, water safety advice. I mean, you can find it anywhere on the internet really. And it's like people could read it for 5 minutes and, you know, be a whole lot more safe just by educating themselves for a minute.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Our slogan. Yep.
Do you think you could put that on Instagram on your site? giving people information like that, or is that?
Sure. For sure. I reckon that's good. One thing we could work more on.
Yes, that's a
It
great
seems like
idea.
you're.
We'll have to put our socials on there. Do it.
It seems like this program is pretty successful, only being a year out. I'm very
Yeah.
impressed. How many
Yeah.
of them that's you, Brooke, India, anybody else that's
Yeah,
involved?
I got a few friends that work at other surf schools, and when they say me and Dad are away getting barreled somewhere over in Indo, well, I have my friends that are surf coaches as well, work at the surf school, and they all know how to do the para surf coat, para the para surfers, and like the disability people take them in the water. They're all educated on that too, and they've done it with us before. We've trained them up, so we got a whole team, but mainly it's just me, Dad, and India.
It sounds like the parasurfing is a big piece of your work for.
Yeah, it definitely is, but it like I mean we definitely do a lot more just normal coaching and like just like our biggest thing's probably just beginner entry level, teaching people like the first basic steps. But the reason I talk so much about the parasurfing is because it's not everywhere, and it means so much, and like it's such a good thing, and it's so cool being able to take someone out and like give them that your time of day and have them just like smiling for a month after it.
It's probably the most challenging.
But it's the most rewarding.
We have a program here called CORE, which does something like that, but on a small basis, maybe once a month, where we take people out, but not to the extent that you have. We don't have those wheels, I don't think. So that I think that's amazing and a very good piece of what you're trying to do.
Thank you.
Yeah, I think that's very cool. I had no idea. I'm gonna keep following you, and I'm gonna have to figure out how to get you. I'll look for you on Instagram. But what do you think Hawaii, what lessons can Hawaii learn from what you're doing? Do you have any thoughts on how we message people? We have, visitors who are consistently having non-fatal drownings or drownings from snorkeling. I don't know if you have an issue with snorkeling, but we do.
Well, I think that would definitely be more so in Hawaii because he's got a lot of reef, and reefs are beautiful. And I mean, there's not really many people snorkeling around here on the Gold Coast because it's all just sand beaches, there's not a whole lot to see.
But you have
But yeah,
rip.
we have rip. But that's the thing with the Gold Coast lifeguards, they're pretty on the ball about it all because they have to be because it's so. Like that, it's a must. Like, it's more predominantly like focused on than anywhere else.
Maybe Hawaii could be the very first country in the world that actually has an app when you come into the airport there, and you have to sign your declaration or whatever it is to come into the country. Then maybe there should be a bit where you have to watch the app, where the Hawaiian water safety teach people shortly for 30 seconds or a minute about what not to do and water safety, and then they have to watch that before they enter the country or something like that, maybe.
Or even like a when you get your signs at the beach, like they should even do it around here where you put a QR code and then you have to watch it and you scan, like everyone's got their phone, everyone's scanning QR
And they
codes,
learning all.
it's all technical these days, but it should be a thing where you scan the QR code and you have to watch like a short 2 minute video on just being able to identify a danger in the water. Because the biggest thing probably being able to identify a danger, because then you're safer that way by avoiding danger.
We're putting a lot of focus on swimming, but I think we better put a little focus on education and before they
For
even
sure.
get to the beach, before they even get here, we should be, you're right. The app has been mentioned before, which is a really good idea. And the QR code also, I think we have to move on that. I have a meeting tonight, a Zoom meeting basically on this, so I'll bring it up. because I
Yeah.
think those are really, really good ideas. Because by the time people get to the beach, they're all excited. They haven't been anywhere. They're at the beach and they just run in. They're not going to talk to anybody. They're not going to look at any sign.
Exactly.
That's for sure. That's for sure. That's
Yeah.
the only way to go to the beach, really, is to be that excited when you get there that you
Yeah.
just run in the water.
Well, that's
So
the
you're
thing, like they don't have to be a good swimmer. Like as if you can swim, you can swim, right? But it's like you can swim in certain places and come out unscathed and be completely fine. You won't drown. But then there's if you can't identify danger or you don't know what you're looking at and you go and swim in these places, like
and you become a
then
statistic. Yeah.
you become then you're putting yourself in danger without even knowing. And I feel like that's the biggest thing that needs to be taught is being able to identify danger and being able to read the water. Because if you can do that, you can pretty much avoid danger before you even go in.
That is such a good message. And I think that's what Hoppo, I never called him that when he was here, Bruce Hopkins, did for us in that short time that he was here. And people that went through this rip current experience felt like they understood now something about the ocean and what it felt like and where to look for it. And that was just a short period of time. It was a 2-hour piece, and we had a lot of people, even though the weather was bad, and we need to have them back to help us do it so that we can become better at doing it ourselves. It isn't something that easy to do. He's been doing it for a while. And it comes like second nature to him. He's all over the world doing this. So we really appreciated him coming out because you're right. You've got to teach people about the ocean conditions before they get in, not tell them about once you're in it, stay calm. No, I think it's better that we educate, give information before, like you just said. I think that's the way to go.
Yeah.
So,
Yeah, Hoppo's a men Hoppo's a
our
mentor to us too. Hoppo's a mentor to us too. And he's helped us out by giving us some ex-lifeguard boards for people to train with, for our crews to train with. So Hoppo, yeah, he's a role model. He's a master at what we're doing. And we're always happy to listen to Hoppo, and he's gifted us with some boards to help FNL train crew. So yeah, we love Hoppo. We
Well,
got the
so
right guy there.
you worked on Bondi Rescue 2 as a film person. Is that
As a
correct?
water cameraman. Yeah, I was the water
Wow.
cameraman. I'm the one who filmed everyone drowning for all those years. Yes, that was my job, jump in the water and swim out and film people drowning, and then hopefully the lifeguard would save them on camera. And the show was, that's what it was, and it was all real. And I spent a lot of my time sitting on the shoreline without a radio. It was kind of a bit of cat and mouse between me and the lifeguards to see who could get to the person drowning first. And I think yeah, I might have won a few of those, that's for sure, and saved a few people on the way. But yeah, that was part of my journey. And yeah, working on Bondi Rescue, and with all the crew there, such a positive thing, that's such a positive workplace, that's what I got me excited about making First Nations lifeguards. And that's how I sort of, I base our thing around working on those shows for 11 years. And spent half my life on Bondi Beach waiting for someone to step off the bank
That was
and
a
film them.
great series. I mean, seriously. 18 seasons, I think, right? I mean, and
Yeah.
people really got a lot of information, a lot of education from those shows.
Yes. Yeah, you can go and watch those shows and learn anything about beach and beach water safety just out of watching all the shows. I did 11 years on there from the very beginning, and then I got a silver watch and left after 11 years. But no, it was a great experience, and that's what started First Nations Lifeguards, was seeing how those people cared for people down there and how they saved lives, and everyone was having fun, and they were having fun while they were saving lives at the same time.
Well, everybody knows that Australia really is leading in water safety and data collection and all kinds of things. Unfortunately, we have to break the image of Baywatch here in Hawaii, right, that we've had. You know, water lifeguards, they just sit around and get tan and they look good, right? So
Yeah.
that's not how it really is, but that show was what we had. And I'm glad it's not on anymore, actually, but I think there's some discussion that it's coming back, and maybe they'll come back doing something like Bondi Rescue, but I don't know. I don't know who could hold a candle to that show. That's amazing. Every time I've watched it, I was just amazed at how, well trained everybody is and works as a team to save people's
Yeah.
lives.
Yeah, and it's 100% real reality. There's no staging parts in it except for the jokes in Bondi Rescue. So yeah, the jokes were staged, but the action and the rescues were 100% real. And people always come up to me and ask me about that, and I have to set them straight and say, yes, that's the way it is. That's the way it was. That's what we filmed, and that's the rescues that took place. And it was 100% real. So. And that's like, walking into the ocean, everyone's having fun, but then all of a sudden there's that real factor to it where you could actually drown while you're out there. And the world needs to understand those,
There's always the risk.
the heaven and hell about being in paradise and wherever you are. So.
Yeah, images really make a difference, speaks more than words, right?
Yes.
What would you like to leave our listeners with? We stream around the world about water safety, and just one last message you'd like to say about what you're doing and what you see happening for your project, which is a great one, next 5 years. What do you envision?
A message I'd like to leave everyone with would probably be, if you're not from somewhere with like big waves and like wild ocean conditions and like somewhere where you grow up getting educated about it and you're like comfortable in those places, if you come from somewhere as a tourist, or you just come from somewhere with mellow beaches, educate yourself and speak to the lifeguards before you enter the waterways, because it'll save you.
That's well said. Anything
Yeah.
you want to leave us with, Brooke?
Yeah, we can't wait to come back to the North Shore and watch the Hawaiian lifeguards.
Well,
Patrol
maybe.
the North Shore on the big days. We love that with Zane Surfing Pipeline and Backdoor last season. And I was there filming it, and we had a couple of moments. And it's so great to have those guys as our true role models, because when we talk about water safety, we talk about the Hawaiian Water Patrol and the lifeguards up there in Hawaii on the North Shore. And they probably get the most challenging conditions to get, and they get a lot of tourists and surfers. And it's always great as a surfer or even as a cameraman on the beach to know that those guys are there, because if something
Yeah.
goes wrong, they're going to be on the spot. Someone's going to survive with them guys. And yeah, we admire them and we look up to them, and we can't wait to go and say hello to them next year.